and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. An aspiring presidential candidate calls on Senegalese President Macky Sall to ensure peaceful and transparent elections next year.
What President Macky Sall did, it's good to, for us to remember that. He changed the constitution to make it very clear that no one can run more than two consecutive terms.
The majority of the Ghanaian parliament backs a measure that seeks to replace a 1960 criminal code on sexual behavior.
We've done a lot of lobbying with our members and our colleagues. Many of them have met me in the hallways of parliament and committee meetings on trips and said to me, I have this problem with the bill. And we've addressed all of those issues.
And gender activists hail the performance of women candidates in the recent general election in Sierra Leone.
It's still work in progress, but that has been a very good step and a bold step taken by the administration, that is the government of Sierra Leone, by bringing on board the BRO system, which made way for a third party in all of the lists to be a female candidate.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Senegal, a former prime minister and an aspiring presidential candidate is calling on President Macky Sall to ensure a level playing field as well as peaceful and transparent elections next year. Aminata Touré from the opposition party Movement for Integrity, Merit and Independence says the president must also pardon all political prisoners, including Ousmane Sonko, a prominent opposition figure. Her remark follows President Sall's announcement that he will not seek a third term in office after his mandate expires. His supporters had argued that his time in office could be reset following a constitutional amendment which was enacted setting a former two-term limit, a stance opposition and civil society groups sharply reject. For more reaction to the president's decision not to seek a third-term mandate, I reach former Prime Minister Aminata Touré.
At last, because that was expected since the aftermath of his re-election in 2019. And if he had said that at that time, that would have saved the country, you know, from the turmoils and the situation that we went through. Because he ended up after that saying, well, I don't know whether I will or I won't. So we lived through, you know, that doubt for almost 5 years. That triggered what we have seen with deaths of young people, 17 officially. So I said at last, but I wish he had said that long time ago, as I said. And in between, the image and the reputation of Senegal got damaged. But I just say yes, he did what he should have said and what he should do. So I don't see any. It's not a hero reaction or a hero accomplishment. I think he just did what he should do.
Why do you think he's not a hero by sticking to the constitution? Because previously, Abdoulaye Wade tried it. Some are saying it sends a strong signal to the entire West Africa region that he should not change the constitution to seek additional terms in office.
Yes, what President Macky Sall did, it's good to, for us to remember that. He changed the constitution to make it very clear that no one can run more than two consecutive terms. Very, very clear. I mean, it's not very complicated French to understand. But after that, when he was asked whether he would run a third time over the past 5 years, he would say, I don't know yet. I might run, I might not run. That's what he said. And then, of course, the Democrats of the country organize themselves. We do have a platform called F24. One of the first points of the platform is to make sure that President Macky Sall doesn't run a third time and respect the Constitution. As you may have followed, there's been a lot of demonstrations and even journalists put in jail. So at last, President Macky Sall decided to respect the Constitution. But as I said, I wish he had done that way before the minute he got re-elected, because that's what the Constitution said. That would have saved us from all you have witnessed, including death of young people, 16 of them.
What did his announcement mean to the people of Senegal?
What it means very clearly that we do have a strong constitution and we are ready to defend it. Had we sat on our hands and just watched, he would have run a third time. I am very sure about that. So people do believe that the constitution is here to stay, to be defended. And the good thing is, I think that the last time in Senegalese history that we will heard about attempt of running a third time. That's not in my lifetime, I think. Remember that we went through hardship, demonstration, death of people, arrestation of journalists. But at last he realized, and including the diaspora, Senegalese of the diaspora demonstrated everywhere. They did a sitting in front of the ICC, International Criminal Court, etc. And there was an international also uproar. The country who congratulated him were the first one to express their concern about the Senegalese situation. So President Macky Sall became realistic and just did what he should have done long ago. For the Senegalese people, it means that, and for the African people too, that we have to stand to defend our principle, our democracy, and that's the only way to go about it.
Some people are calling on the president to ensure that there's a level playing field and that elections are credible and transparent in next year's election. What are your thoughts before we go?
The first thing he needs to prevent himself from doing is selecting the candidate. We know that one of the candidates, named Ousmane Sonko, is under house arrest, illegally actually. He has been going through, another judicial procedure. And the idea was to keep him from, the election from running. The other candidate, myself, we have to go through the process of sponsorship and we don't know what's going to happen. So if President Macky Sall wants to, at the end and at last, exit, with honor, he should pardon, all potential candidates, as he's planning to do for former son of Abdoulaye Wade, Karim Wade, who went through jail and, had to pay a lot of billions of CFA, to the state.
Aminata Touré is a former prime minister and an aspiring presidential candidate in Senegal. She spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Majority of the Ghanaian parliament has backed a measure that seeks to replace a 1960 criminal code on sexual behavior. The measure is called the Promotion of Proper Human Rights and Ghanaian Values Bill 2032. If passed, it will criminalize those who engage in sexual acts deemed non-heterosexual. Offenders proved to have promoted LGBTQ activities in the West African nation face up to 10 years in jail. Those found of engaging in sexual activities deemed non-heterosexual will face up to 3 years in jail. But critics, including Amnesty International, condemned the proposed bill, saying it undermines the fundamental right of some citizens. They also expressed regret that the lawmakers aim to criminalize sexual activities between consenting adults. Sam Nate George is the lead sponsor of the newly proposed bill. He tells me that the measure has a groundswell of support from religious leaders, traditional rulers, and a majority of Ghanaians.
Well, I just want to say a very big thank you to them. We've done a lot of lobbying with our members and our colleagues. Many of them have met me in the hallways of Parliament and committee meetings on trips and said to me, I have this problem with the bill. And we've addressed all of those issues, either by explaining to them what they understand or didn't understand, and by listening to some of the concerns they have raised. So we have a bill that largely represents the position of all 275 members. And so I just want to say a big thank you to all of them.
What role do you think the Speaker of Parliament played in this directive? Because I'm sure you heard that it came under withering criticisms, because some people are suggesting that Ghanaians are undermining freedoms of people to practice. They said it's undermining Ghana's constitution.
Well, the Speaker remains a bulwark and a bastion for us in our exercise of this right as a Parliament of Ghana. And we cannot say thank you enough to the Speaker for standing firm in the face of a lot of provocation and antagonism from misguided elements in the West. We remain a sovereign Parliament. Our Speaker represents the position of the House, and we stand united with our Speaker. Those who say that freedoms are being taken away, there are no absolute freedoms in the 1992 Constitution of Ghana. The 1992 Constitution of Ghana is clear that all freedoms conferred on you are enjoyable insofar as they are in tandem with the principles of public health, public safety, and public morality, stated in black and white in Ghana's constitution, public morality. And so those freedoms are not absolute. They are contingent on they being in conformity with public health, public morals, and public safety. And so we are actually fortified in the provisions of the constitution.
Parliament backed this measure. What is the next step? Because some people are suggesting that the president, being a human rights defender, perhaps he might decide not to sign it into law. Your thoughts?
Well, we are yet to go through the consideration, clause by clause consideration, and then the final reading of the bill. But once that is done, the president will have 6 months to give presidential assent to it. The president acts for and on behalf of the people of Ghana, not on his own behalf. And there are no rights conferred on LGBTQ plus people in Ghana. Our constitution, our laws, even as they stand today, do not confer any rights. And so the president cannot be defending rights that don't exist. The president answers to the people of Ghana, in whose name he exercises power and holds power in trust for. He would have no other option than to act according to the will of the people of Ghana.
I'm sure you've heard of this concern that most people are expressing, that if this is signed into law, it will inhibit investors from coming to Ghana. Resources that they said the country needs to create the enabling environment for businesses to go and to create jobs for youth in Ghana society, especially in your constituency. How do you respond to such concerns?
Those are fanciful fears and false premises that are built to support the LGBTQ narrative. I am not aware of any investor who comes to invest in Ghana and has previously sought to know whether Ghana supports LGBTQ or not. Any investor who is investing in Ghana is investing because Ghana is a good market and because they will get returns on their investment. If an American business will not come to Ghana because we have laws against LGBTQ, how come American businesses were involved in the construction of stadia in Qatar, which punishes LGBTQ by death? It didn't deter American businesses from going to work there. The bottom line for businesses is profit. It is not about what a country's laws are. So long as those laws are not inimical to the operations or functions of your investment, except you're coming to invest in LGBTQ merchandising and promotion in Ghana, then you are unwelcome to Ghana. But if you are coming to do any other business, our shores are open.
I heard you are receiving a lot of attention since you moved this bill in Parliament. What are you doing with all this attention?
Well, I'm like a rock. When you pour water on a rock, it doesn't permeate it. It just rolls off it. So a lot of the negative attention and hate mail and attacks and victimization and things that are happening either by state actors or individuals, well, we take it on our chin and proceed. It means that we're doing something right. We're doing something great. The positive attention, we harness it and channel it into doing better good for our people and the people of Ghana that I serve.
Sam Nate George is a prominent Ghanaian lawmaker. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. In Sierra Leone, gender activists are hailing the performance of women candidates in the just-concluded general election. Female parliamentarians increased to 41 from 17 in 2018. This, the activists say, was due to the implementation of the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Act of 2022, the brainchild of President Julius Maada Bio. They say there is more work to be done to achieve the 50% parity target for women in parliament. For more reaction to the increased number of female lawmakers, I reach Cecilia Christina Matea. She is the coordinator, National Advocacy Coalition on Extractives, Sierra Leone.
It's still work in progress, but that has been a very good step and a bold step taken by the administration, that is the government of Sierra Leone, by bringing on board the PR system, which made way for a third party in all of the lists to be a female candidate. And so that automatically made it very possible for the increment of women in parliament.
Supporters of the SLPP, the ruling party, say that before the government introduced the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Act of 2022, there were only 17 women members of parliament. This time around, it's 41, more than double. Is this a true reflection of the situation on the ground?
Indeed, it's a true reflection of the situation on the ground. We have been talking much more about gender issues, and I think because of the recent Giwe bill, the Gender Empowerment and Women, the Gender Empowerment Bill, I think there has been deliberate efforts where women's rights issues are now taking the front burner, rather than all the while talking about gender mainstreaming, and it was difficult to still mainstream gender. And so now we talk about women's empowerment, which made way for the number of women, because of the process and procedures that have been taken into the political decision. And that has made some efforts where women have pushed harder and have come a long way, because this is not new, like you rightly said. It started way in the days of the Madam Ella Koblo Grammars and others who started advocating for women in parliament, a good number of women in parliament. And so we are seeing the beginning of a new dawn where this effort has not been eroded over the years, but that more work has been put into it. And based on that, we now see women's rights issues being taken the front seat. So that it's still work in progress, but I think we have really tried as a nation to make sure we don't just talk about gender issues, we now talk about women's rights issues.
What do you think can be done to help achieve the gender parity, especially in parliament, to have a 50% representation of female in the Sierra Leonean parliament? Do you think it's achievable within the next short possible time?
It is. If we have been doing a lot of political economy of our country, and we have to pay specific attention to women's rights economic issues, and as we give them the confidence that they can have their own money to run with, they can have their own resources, whether it's financial, it's technical, and it's human. They can step forward. So in the next shortest possible time, with the implementation of the Giwe Bill, I think we all have to put our hands on that, not leaving the men, but we have to make some deliberate efforts in continuing the push for the women's rights issue. I mean, we'll drum gender, but gender means men and women. So I think we need some much more effort in terms of economy, in terms of giving them the space to take, and in terms of families' knowledge for women to participate at whatever level. So I see that very possible, because we are having the space from the political class, and I think we need communities to understand, not only at the political level, we now need to drill down to communities for them to understand that women and girls are very key in nation building. And so I see that very possible in the shortest time.
Cecilia Christiana Mattia is the coordinator, National Advocacy Coalition on Extractives, Sierra Leone. She spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Meanwhile, a group of Sierra Leoneans in the diaspora plans to launch a series of demonstrations next week to protest against the outcome of the recent presidential election. Citing voter irregularities and rigging, they are calling on the international community to impose sanctions against those who they say were responsible for undermining the credibility of the polls. The Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone declared incumbent President Julius Maada Bio as winner of the presidential contest with 56.1% of the total vote cast. His main challenger, former Foreign Minister Samora Camara, who came in second with 41.16%, rejected the outcome of the poll. Dr. Shaw Sawyer is the coordinator of the Sierra Leonean American Political Affairs Committee. He tells me that the poll observers stated that the recent elections lack transparency.
These plans is far ahead now. You have Sierra Leoneans who are American citizens, Sierra Leoneans who are UK citizens, European citizens, and they saw what has happened in Sierra Leone. They saw the rigged election, and they saw that the people's rights to vote have not been protected. And so they've decided that they want to protect democracy. Sierra Leone came out of civil war, and we knew what led to that civil war. We've had about 5 general elections that were peaceful, and this one has not been peaceful. The people are intimidated, they are harassed, they are killed. So Sierra Leoneans living out of Sierra Leone, have family members in Sierra Leone, have decided to have a massive demonstration globally to protect the rights of citizens in Sierra Leone.
The argument by supporters of the president, and for that matter, the ruling party, is that how can you say the election is not credible, yet you admit that in the mayoral election, the APC candidate who was the incumbent won re-election. So how is that journey? However, you are contesting the election that produced the outcome of which the incumbent president also won the...
And that is exactly the point. The president was declared winner while ballots were still out in the field. Unsealed ballots were brought in, stated by the Carter Center and other national and international observers. Ballots were not counted. So they announced the president a winner. But the mayor was announced a winner a week later, which shows you that there were inconsistencies in counting the ballot. If you could announce nationally the president a winner, why waited a week later that you had to count the ballots for the city to announce the mayor? Meaning you were cooking the numbers or you're trying to fix the numbers. And as much as possible, Sierra Leoneans vote on party lines. So if majority of Sierra Leoneans in the city voted for the mayor, that automatically tells you that Sierra Leoneans that vote on party lines would have voted also for the party where the mayor belongs, which is the APC party. But what has happened is that before the ballots were counted, the announced winner of the presidency. So that has been stated by local observers that has been stated by national and international observers that this election was flawed. The counting was flawed. This is the reason for the massive demonstrations outside of Sierra Leone, because Sierra Leoneans in Sierra Leone are not allowed to protest.
So what is the significance of this protest? What are you asking the international community to do in this instance? Because the president was declared winner by the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, or ECL. There are rules by which you can go to the court and seek redress if you did not like the outcome of the vote. So what are you looking for?
Well, the protest internationally, and to address that part about redress in the court is also state captured. So therefore, APC has lost every political case in the courts. So that's why the protest is internationally to deal with our international partners who provide some form of international funds. But what we're looking at is what's called specific smart sanctions. Specific smart sanctions that would not affect the citizens, the people of Sierra Leone, daily life. Specific smart sanctions as travel ban on the government officials of Sierra Leone who have rigged this election, who have stole the rights of the people. Specific smart sanctions on those election body commissioners, travel ban on them and their families. So it'd be specific and smart sanctions. You're only targeting those officials who have stole the rights of the people, who are destroying democracy. So the sanctions that we're seeking would be specific and what we call smart sanctions.
Dr. Sho Sawyer is the coordinator of the Sierra Leonean American Political Affairs Committee. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Liberia, a former student leader is calling on the international community to pressure authorities to investigate human violations in the country. Christopher Walter Cecilu Sivili was attacked last year by thugs during a protest against the government on the country's Independence Day near the U.S. Embassy. He said he had to go into exile because he fears for his life. He is now calling for an independent investigation and prosecution of those responsible for violating his human rights. Sivili says politically related violence could increase leading up to the coming elections if those responsible for violence are not prosecuted. His remarks come after opposition and student groups expressed concern that the police often use excessive force to crack down on their protests, an accusation the police deny. The police say they only enforce law and order and warn citizens not to break the law. For more on his call for the investigation and prosecution of human rights abusers, I reach Christopher Walter Cecilu Sivili.
As a former student leader of the University of Liberia and a victim of torture within the country, I'm using this medium and this opportunity to call on the international community to look at the human rights situations within the country. Because currently within the country, there has been lot of human rights violations. That today, there has been no reports coming from organizations that are responsible to create such a report. But from all indications, the human rights violation within the country is not unique for our country. And so I think it's very much necessary for the international community to look at the level of human rights violations that has taken place within the country. It is so much saddening for our country, and I think it is the responsibility of the human rights institutions within the international community to ensure that they look at the situation in Liberia currently.
Christopher, what do you say to supporters of the administration who say that the human rights situation in the country is all right and that some of these issues that you are talking about is a figment of your own imagination, and that you have never experienced any human rights violation?
The human rights violation within the country has been highlighted by the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia. And if you read the report of the U.S. embassy in Del Monte of last year regarding human rights violation, you will understand that it is very much unbecoming within the country, because there are a lot of judicial secret killing within the country that has been highlighted by the U.S. Embassy near Monrovia. So my argument when it comes to human rights issues within the country, I'm not just speaking because I feel like speaking. It is something that is a very fact, and those who are supporting the government understand that there has been a lot of human rights violations within the country. And as a former student leader and also a victim of human rights violations, I was stripped, I was tortured, I was humiliated, I was brutalized by supporters of the government on July 26th of last year. And up to this time, there has been no report, even coming from the justice system, when it comes to prosecuting those who were found guilty within that matter. And it is unfortunate for that to happen within the country. That is why, as a young man, I'm calling on the international community, looking at all of the indicators within the country when it comes to human rights violations. It is important for them to ensure that they look at the human rights issue within the country.
Some of the supporters of the government have dismissed demands by civil society groups for an independent investigation into some of these alleged human rights violations, and that a lot of student activists like you are trying to create tension in the country, are trying to create disaffection. You break the law at will, and those who break the law must be made to face the full rigors of the law, irrespective of their societal status.
Let me take my situation into consideration. At the University of Liberia, what we did on July 26th, it was something that was in conformance with the law. We did not violate the 1986 constitution that talks about peaceful assembly. So from all indications, those are government supporters who continue to say that the students or the young people are responsible to create chaos within the country. I think that they are violating the democratic rights and the constitutional rights of the young people within the country. The law is very much clear that it is our duty to peacefully assemble anytime we wish for us to do so, in order for us to send our dissatisfaction to the national government. So on the last minute, like my situation, we are calling on the government to look into the report coming from the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission that has indicted the current Minister of Agriculture. And we're also calling on the government to look at the situation at Legis. Legis is the entity that is responsible to organize the census within the country. And there are a lot of scandals at Legis. So on that day, we are calling on the government to look into the corruption scandal at Legis. But out of the sudden, folks who are addicted to drugs, they release them to unleash them on us in the name of counter protest.
Christopher Walter Sisulu Sivili is a Liberian human rights activist and a former student leader. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location. Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Zambia, the main opposition party, Patriotic Front, or PF, has announced plans to hold its convention in October. This will pave the way to elect party leaders. Analysts say since losing the presidential race about 21 months ago, the PF has failed to renew its leadership. The analysts say former President Edgar Lungu, who was defeated by current President Hakainde Hichilema, may step down and hand over the reins of the party to a new leader. For the latest development about the opposition party's plans for the coming convention, I reach Raphael Nakachinda. He is the Patriotic Front member of the Central Committee for Information and Publicity.
At the last Central Committee meeting that was held, we did deliberate and come up with two dates. Remember, we had been working on a legislative conference that is going to adopt the draft constitution that has been generated through the submissions of members across the country, as well as other stakeholders. And it's upon having that legislative conference that a new constitution will be submitted to the authorities, in this case, Registrar of Society. And then we have also set a tentative date of 28th of October for the elective conference. So that is the position. Though as we speak now, we are in a neck meeting or National Executive Committee meeting arising from the fact that there are two national events that are taking place on the same date we had proposed for the legislative conference, which is the 29th of July. So we're just deliberating to look at whether or not that will jeopardize the participation and the participation of members from the provinces where those events are taking place.
Why did it take so long a time for this decision to be made for the convention? Because at a point, a member of the party had taken this matter to court to force the party to hold its convention.
I can state to you that those legal matters that went before one of the members took to court were equally a hindrance, because there was an injunction obtained. There is a question of the legality of or legitimacy of the Central Committee, including the vice president, who in this case was acting president, as well as the deputy secretary general, who was acting as secretary general. So we have those matters before court, but from the advice that was given by our legal chairman was that we still could conduct business at Central Committee and set dates. But Central Committee further gave a mandate to the chairman legal to seek legal opinions from legal practitioners, but under the Law Association of Zambia, to be able to give us a legal opinion, or maybe two, three other legal opinion that would advise on whether or not we could proceed with the dates we have set in view of the matters that are in court and other internal administrative matters of the delegates and so on, because the delay has been on the desire by the leadership of the party to make sure that the process to electing a president is not faulty. One, we also respond to the demands by the general public to rebrand the party. And the rebranding starts with a structure arrangement of the party, and which can only be adjusted by amending our constitution.
What makes of the legal case that a member went to court forcing the party to hold its convention? What happens to it now?
Well, the arguments of the member in that particular case you're citing, now that the party has said this is the date, if he was genuinely seeking that the party should hold the conference, it means that that exercise in court is just academic, and therefore he should just come and join the bandwagon so that he also can exercise his rights and freedoms at the conference. For now, the party is determined that none of these issues hold us to ransom. We have a very solid legal team that is defending us in court, defending the party in court, and those matters will be resolved.
Some people are saying that since the party lost power a little over 21 months ago, the party appears to be in disarray. There's no unity. Some members are shying away. Others are trying to defect. Some have resigned from the party and all that.
When you look at the pattern, the way the members of, for example, UNIP were defecting and moving to the new political party, just like the MMD are moving to Patriotic Front. This time around, there hasn't been that, you know, exodus of members that would worry anybody. Of course, you know, the politics are dynamic, and political parties sometimes and members are a bit fluid. We have had one or two defections, but not one that would worry the organization.
Rafael Nakachinda is a member of the PF Central Committee for Information and Publicity. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Has social media improved your life, or is it more of a distraction? We'd love to hear from you. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, plus one, 202-258-3076. Can't wait to hear from you.
He is an avowed Ugandan government critic and human rights activist who escaped into exile after alleging torture while in jail. Kakwenza Rukirabashaija is out with a new book entitled The Savage Avenger. And in an interview with VOA, Kakwenza says, quote, "When you torture a writer, he bleeds ink." Kakwenza was charged with offensive communications after writing a critical book about Muhoozi Kainerugaba, the son of President Yoweri Museveni. The government accused him of using his Twitter account to offend both the president and his son. He was subsequently arrested and charged. Kakwenza won the Pen Pinter Prize International Writer of Courage Award in 2021. In an interview with me, Kakwenza says he plans to return home to continue with his activism in an effort to make Uganda a better place for all citizens.
You know, when you torture a writer, he breathes ink. So I was tortured by the savages who are referred to by the president as his avengers. So that is the reason why I came up with that title, The Savage Avenger, because the son of the president is the one who tortured me. So I came up with that title.
You know, but some of your critics are saying that he was nowhere near that, and that you were not even tortured, and that some of the scars on your body you self-inflicted to attract international attention, to make the government look bad, President Museveni to look bad, just so you can go into exile and thrive there, so to speak. How do you respond to that?
So before I was arrested, I was very healthy. I didn't have any scar on my body. And I was released or smuggled into court when I was almost, I think I was half dead. I can't say that I was living. I was half dead, I was living. And my entire body was swollen. The body was actually oozing pus. The legs were all swollen, like I had elephantiasis. And when I raised the issue before court, the magistrate, with impunity, whittled it down and instead directed the prisons to give a report. And indeed, when I arrived in prison, they took pictures of my shredded body, and, you know, everything was, you know, it looked so disgusting. And they gave a report that indeed the guy was tortured. And I healed when I was in prison. By the time I came out of Chitaria and then kidnapped again from the gate, at least the shredded body had, the scars were a bit dried, and except the ankles and other joints, they were still swollen. So the prison report is there. I was taken into prison when I was tortured, from SFC military barracks to court, then to prison. I was tortured. Before I was arrested or kidnapped, I was very okay. So until people saw me like a caricature of my former self when I was released from their, you know, custody, That is when my lawyer, actually, you saw my lawyer crying on the television, saying that I've seen victims of torture, but I've never seen the kind like Kakwenza's torture.
What were you accused of?
Disturbing. In court, they charged me with disturbing the peace of the president.
Talking about Better Uganda, some people are saying that you are fighting, or you were fighting, against the Better Uganda that they have now, and that you are undermining the country's territorial integrity, and that you are an agent of either a neighboring country or the West, sowing discord among the people.
So who was saying that?
Your critics. Some officials of the government said so.
What should they say? Because they are comfortable eating, and it is a shameful solidarity with the NRM regime, whereas they are glorifying all the violence, glorifying corruption, glorifying all the barbarism that is taking place. For us, we are saying no. And however much we say no, we have solidarity with other people who are looking at it in a humanity perspective. They look at our cause as the main cause. If we say no, there is no, we want a country where there is no corruption, we want a country where there is respect for the rule of law, we have solidarity from everywhere in the world. So the critics, those who are benefiting from the rogues, from the impunity of the regime, for them, theirs is shameful solidarity. For them, they are, when they are comfortable, they think that everyone else is comfortable. And after all, they are also victims. There is no one who is safe, because we have seen them also being murdered in cold blood.
Kakwenza Ruki Rabashaija is an avowed Ugandan government critic and a human rights activist. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Take
Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Kote, in Washington, D.C. Continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Holvey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, no matter how sharp a knife is, it can never sharpen its own handle. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.